21. Game, set and catch. The High Court decides. 2017 to 2018. In early 2017, as the Supreme Court case drags on, Dalsley and Carlyon come together again to work on an unrelated story. Their last big joint venture was an investigation of the serial rapist Adrian Bailey, who killed journalist Jill Maher in 2012. Their new case will prove to be equally eye-opening. James Gargasoulis is a crazed man who took ice, then stabbed his brother in the early hours of the 20th of January, just days after getting bail for previous offences. Gargasoulis was finally shot by police around 4:30 p.m. after he careered through crowds of pedestrians in Melbourne's Bourke Street, driving a stolen car. He injured 27 people and killed six, including a baby boy thrown 60 metres from his pram, and no one knew why. Carlyon speaks to victims and witnesses, as well as the medicos who treated Gargasoulis in the same hospital as many of his victims. As previously, Carlyon is struck by Dalsley's knack of speaking with police officers in a way that earns their trust. He may write stories that displease them, but he never exposes them for their unofficial assistance. Nothing is on the record. No notes are taken until the officer leaves, when both journalists scribble madly on random bits of paper, and each hopes that the other has recalled what he forgot. Dalsley spends his workdays on the phone, often not settling at his computer to write until half an hour before deadline. Carlyon covets time to impart a sense of being there, to make what a former colleague once sarcastically referred to as powerful observations. They blend their strengths in a partnership long forged by their mutual need for coffee and a shared desire to prove their old newspaper editor, Shirley, wrong in her assessments of them. Dalsley starts explaining the Lawyer X scandal during these breaks from work. At first, Carlyon doesn't understand what Dalsley is talking about. Dalsley speaks of Gobbo's baby daughter and rumours of illicit encounters. But the details of the Comrie review, Kellam report and the Supreme Court goings-on remain hidden at this point, even from Dalsley. Dalsley explains, with diagrams, several times before Carlyon understands the case's import. Carlyon grasps legal tenets, partly from a brief fantasy he once had of studying law. Dalsley takes Carlyon to meet Nikki Komiazic, Terry and Christine Hodson's daughter. Dalsley is necessarily careful. His knowledge is legally forbidden under suppression orders, and he can't tell Komiazic much. From Carlyon's point of view, Komiazic bathes the Gobbo tales in humanity. She cries a lot, and her distress clarifies the jumble of extraordinary facts. The Gobbo scandal is not just about the disregarded legal rights of drug traffickers and murderers. The bigger story is the suffering of real people through a barrister's abuse of power. Readers can relate to that, but how to explain the mess to anyone without a law degree? Dalsley buries Carlyon in confidential documents, then patiently interprets each for him. The coffee breaks turn into after-work drinks, when Dalsley switches from coffee to bourbon and coke. Most striking to Carlyon is the way police politics have interfered with the pursuit of truth. If police always set priorities, as they did for the Hodson investigations, many more cases would go unsolved. Carlyon wants in. He goes to see editor Damon Johnston at the start of 2018, right after his Christmas break. Johnston doesn't yell, like most newspaper editors, yet Carlyon fears a negative response. Newsrooms are shrinking rapidly. Journalists must keep busy across many things. Carlyon wants to indulge in the luxury of longer-form journalism at the expense of writing daily news. He's challenging a modern media paradigm in which a story's merits are measured by the number of online hits they generate, Like sports analysis, journalism has become hijacked by nerds and numbers. Johnston opens up his Lawyer X holy shit dossier and flicks through clumps of paper as he describes the legal battles between the police and the newspaper. It's a story he likes to tell, and he can't tell it to many people. Carlyon bluffs his way through the ins and outs, a common theme in his first months on Lawyer X. But he understands Johnston's cat-and-mouse analogy. He warms to Johnston's pride in the innovative ways the newspaper has avoided legal censure. Fighting for the truth has cost six-figure sums in a time of declining readership and revenue across the industry. It could also land Johnston in jail. Both he and the police know the fight will end if a sympathetic judge bows to the police argument about Gobbo's safety. But there's no room for compromise. The Lawyer X story will be properly told, or it will not be told at all. Johnston agrees to Carlyon's suggestion that he work exclusively on the story with Dowsley for the next few months. Carlyon and Dowsley are dispatched to another floor. Amid the curious murmurs of their colleagues, sarcasm greets their attempts at secrecy. Their little project casts them as precious. The alternative floor has been stripped, redundant space in a shrinking organization. Tape is strung up around areas of unsafe flooring, like cordoned-off crime scenes, tradies' drill and hammer, and wonder why these two blokes are in their worksite. Dowsley and Carlyon hunker down in their disused boardroom office, spill dozens of documents onto the table, and wonder what to do next. Here, over countless hours, they solve the Hodson murders again and again. At some point, perhaps day three, they confront the vastness of their task, as colleagues start finding excuses to sniff around. They poke fun at the pair's whiteboard, which is turned to face the wall before the office is locked each night. On the board, Dowsley is building a cast of characters and a list of topics. A Who Knew section includes three Victoria Police Chief Commissioners. Soon, the whiteboard is dotted with squiggles, as if a toddler with a texter has come to consult. The story and its incestuous connections defy neat answers. Dowsley and Carlyon go to see lawyers and police officers and criminals. Carlyon sometimes wonders which are which. He notes Dowsley's ability to juggle their conflicting interests without once misleading an interviewee. Dowsley and Carlyon write about 30,000 words, a lot of copy for a tabloid newspaper, especially with no guarantee it will ever be published. The pair rework the ghosts of gangland, Williams and Mockbell, as well as Karam and the Honoured Society, are recast with a blonde woman as their puppeteer. For Carlyon, the who, what, and how aspects of the Gobbo story fall into a loose chronology, but the why remains elusive. The Scorpion's Sting, the first instalment of what will be an eight-part exposé, is written working blind. The pair do not possess a single Gobbo police information report. On Wednesday the 9th of May, Johnston calls Dowsley and Carlyon to his office. They're being shut down, perhaps permanently. Victoria Police have won the right to appeal to the High Court. The saga could drag out another year or more, and Johnston cannot spare that time for two journalists to work on something that may never appear in print. The force's blind determination to kill the story reminds Carlyon of the cyborg cop in Terminator 2. The reputations of those chief commissioners listed on Dowsley's whiteboard seem to matter just as much as the courtroom claims about Gobbo's safety. On that last day, Dowsley gets an exclusive tip-off that hitman Rodney Collins has died of natural causes in a prison hospital. Dowsley, Carlyon, and colleague Mark Butler write the story up for the next day's paper, emphasising that Collins was the prime suspect as the hitman who killed the Hodsons. Collins has taken his secret to the grave. His death is another obstacle to uncovering the truth. Did he murder the Hodsons on the say-so of a dirty cop? Over 3 months, Dowsley and Carlyon have published only one story related to the Lawyer X scandal. At this rate, they've produced an average of just 17 published words a day. Their little project stinks of misplaced faith in truth and justice. The pair tape up boxes of Lawyer X documents, sweep up the empty Diet Coke bottles, and go to the pub. Gobbo is still eschewing overtures to accept police protection. She continues to treat the offer as an unpleasant lifestyle choice rather than a lifeline. She doesn't hide, unless the shortening of her Christian name is aimed at confusing hitmen. Nicola has become Nikki. She has a new identity, Supermum. Her patch is Brighton, a preserve of Bayside Melbourne known for blonde women in expensive cars. Here, if anywhere, surely she can blend in, though not all her choices are conventional. Another lawyer spots Gobbo at Baby Bunting in neighbouring Bentley as she's getting a child out of the car, a smoke dangling from her mouth. The mother of two helps out at the Brighton Playroom, her kids' childcare centre. Website photos show her at an event at the centre with local politicians who wear the fixed smiles of ho-hum electoral duties. Gobbo has always had a softer side. Not that it had much chance to be expressed throughout her informing history. She reminisces about her own childhood under the tutelage of two giving parents. That she might seek to give to others as a parent is not as jarring as it first seems. Volunteer work lacks the thrills and dangers of informing, but Gobbo embraces it as a natural calling. The gangland weapon shows skilled and selfless leadership at the centre. She is practical and passionate. She engineers transformational changes from strengthening child safety policies to finding ways to help disadvantaged families. Gobbo helps create a true community hub at Brighton Playroom. How do we know all this? It comes from a Victorian Premier's award citation in September 2018. Gobbo picks up her Volunteers Award from Victoria's early childhood minister, Jenny Makarkos, at Government House, the one-time residence of her uncle, Sir James Gobbo. Hailed as the Brighton Playroom's saviour, she beams for the media's cameras. She looks younger and fresher than she did a decade ago. Her sculpted features prompt murmurs that she has had work. Now, she's just another Gobbo doing good things. And never mind the death threats. Johnston does not let the opportunity pass. He dispatches a Herald Sun photographer to the event to snap Gobbo in case the legal suppression of her identity is ever lifted. In early November 2018, as president of her daughter's Brighton Kinder, Wilson Street Kindergarten, Gobbo attends an end-of-year celebration at a local park. The mums sip wines from plastic glasses, while the dads watch over the kids as they ride bikes and climb on the play equipment. Gobbo has maintained an illusion of normality for several years. The other mothers don't know anything about the police threats to forcibly remove her children if she doesn't change her name and move away. Nikki is just another mum, a kindly person who accommodates parents seeking to change session times, even if her trademark bluntness has survived her shift of roles. "If you don't behave, I'll put you in the boot," she's overheard telling her son tongue-in-cheek. The normality is about to end, and Gobbo knows it. The same week as the Kinder Park catch-up, she is spotted at Flight Centre in Bentley. She needs a ticket overseas, she tells staff. "You'll know all about it next week." Dowsley gets a call around the same time, a few days after the running of the Melbourne Cup on the 6th of November. The reliable source speaks in code. "That thing. I'd start riding." The murk clears in ensuing calls, equally secretive, with other sources. The High Court has made its decision. Dowsley and Carlyon are told that Victoria Police won't like it. On the 25th of November, over 6 months after Carlyon and Dowsley down tools, events can finally be mapped. The High Court decision remains a closely guarded secret. Off stage, Victoria Police are still scrambling to conceal Gobbo's identity on safety grounds. Indications, and they are only hints, suggest the High Court has denied Victoria Police's appeal. It will announce its decision publicly at 9 a.m. on Monday, the 3rd of December, 1,708 days after Dowsley's first Lawyer X story. The police can no longer hide the truth. Strange as it may seem, the almost certain knowledge that Gobbo's story can finally be told is not met with high fives at the Herald Sun. Dowsley jiggles. Johnston calls the company lawyers. Carlyon swears absently. He had come to assume that, like his chances of placing a winning Melbourne Cup bet, this moment would never come to pass. Then Carlyon and Dowsley scramble again. Deputy editor Chris Tinkler doesn't carry a whip, but perhaps he should. He, Dowsley, and Carlyon second an office on the same floor as the Herald Sun newsroom this time, which they promptly fill with fast food wrappers. The secret is unofficially out. Colleagues no longer snigger about the crazy story that seems bigger and longer than any other. Suppression bans prevent disclosure of the High Court decision before the 3rd of December. But stories alluding to a big announcement, without naming the announcement itself, are an occupational necessity. Another news outlet could scoop the Herald Sun on a story that the newspaper single-handedly brought to public attention. Dowsley and Carlyon write a front-page story on the 30th of November. It is a teaser that flags one of the biggest scandals in Victoria's legal history. The next day, a story about Tony Mockbell's bid for release is headlined, "A Wig and a Prayer." Disbelief tinges these days. Carlyon wonders whether Victoria Police will stymie the High Court judgment, but doesn't doubt that they will try. Dowsley picks up snippets that letters of disclosure will be sent to a handful or more of convicted criminals, but that perhaps 600 cases will be affected. The moniker of Lawyer X is coming back, but will Gobbo's name and age still be hidden from view? Will she be able to tend to be identified through details such as her gender and background? Different versions of newspaper stories, with differing levels of detail, are prepared. Scrupulous checks and balances are applied, depending on legal restrictions. All references in draft stories to Nicola Gobbo may have to change to Lawyer X. The Herald Sun assumes the police will fight to prevent every scrap of truth from being published. Carlyon wakes on the morning of Monday, the 3rd of December, and sneaks in a comfort cigarette to prepare for the intense day ahead. Dowsley has slept poorly. In their frenzied skimming after the High Court judgment is released at 9 a.m, they find a strident denunciation that vindicates Dowsley's years-long pursuit. The High Court ruling is unequivocal. It encapsulates the astonishment of other judgments and reviews over the past 6 years. The seven judges express naked wrath at Victoria Police and Gobbo. They find that the Gobbo subterfuge was deliberate and most likely a criminal offence. The High Court appeal bid was held under the easiest of conditions for Gobbo and Victoria Police. The individuals affected by Gobbo's informing, the prisoners languishing in jail, could not be heard. They could not contradict the evidence of the police or Gobbo. When Gobbo gave evidence in the Ghanaian trial, she invoked legal professional privilege to refuse to answer questions about clients. Now, she can no longer dictate the outcomes. Both she and Victoria Police have failed to appreciate the impact of their behaviour. The court cites a 1908 judgment that states the end does not justify the means. Victoria Police are guilty of reprehensible conduct in knowingly encouraging EF, Gobbo, to do as she did, and were involved in sanctioning atrocious breaches of the sworn duty of every police officer to discharge all duties imposed on them faithfully and according to law without favour or affection, malice or ill will. As a result, the prosecution of each convicted person was corrupted in a manner which debased fundamental premises of the criminal justice system. Gobbo's vetting of police briefs against her own clients and Victoria Police's concerted efforts to conceal it are described with particular eloquence by the High Court. They poisoned the fountain of justice. The court will suppress Gobbo's name for 3 months for safety reasons. Yet if Gobbo and her children are endangered by the court's decision, the responsibility does not lie with the judiciary. If EF, Gobbo, chooses to expose herself to consequent risk by declining to enter into the witness protection program, she will be bound by the consequences. If she chooses to expose her children to similar risks, the state is empowered to take action to protect them from harm. Later that morning, Darsley and Carlyon happen to be standing together in the Herald Sun newsroom when they hear a radio news report. Premier Daniel Andrews has made an announcement following the High Court's decision. Carlyon turns to Darsley. "Ha!" he says, "you got your royal commission." The days after the revelations of the 3rd of December 2018 are odd for many of the main players in the Gobbo saga. Lawyer Ruth Parker is outraged when the Gobbo conspiracy against her client Farouk Orman is revealed. He is featured in Gobbo's list of top 10 stings in her 2015 letter to Steve Fontana. He was convicted of murder in circumstances in which the court and his defence team were denied critical knowledge about Gobbo's deceit. Parker gets on ABC radio and demands police documents relating to her client's case. She calls the Gobbo revelations a disgrace. It works too. She receives the confidential police information reports about her client long before other lawyers who deploy the more conventional path of paper wars with Victoria Police. But Parker's win comes at a price. It concerns the strange story of the $250,000 S450 Mercedes parked outside her home in Melbourne's southern suburbs. Parker is preoccupied with preparing for a trip to Bali and doesn't notice the car herself, but neighbours do when it sits unattended for days. She leaves for her holiday in December, having mentioned her departure to friends and colleagues in phone and email correspondence. At the last minute, a relative decides to house-sit. The day after Parker's departure, the keys of the strange Mercedes turn up on her kitchen island, inside her locked home. How did they get there? And why, if there was a break-in, was nothing stolen? Parker has theories. She thinks the car keys were left behind by an intruder who got a fright after he entered the house. He did not want to take anything, she suggests, but rather add an unwelcome extra, an electronic bug. The scenario sounds removed from reality, but her suspicions are heightened after she calls police about the car keys in her home. Police later tell her they have no record of her report. Some of her fellow lawyers worry that their offices have been illegally entered and that their phones have been bugged. Other reactions vary. Roberta Williams seethes. "Give me 5 minutes with that woman," she begins, before launching into violent fantasies. A gangland judge is overheard in a Richmond shop. "I could kill her. It was always me with her." Guard Wilson feels vindicated. She almost worked out the Gobbo secret years ago. Dowsley, too, wonders if police have ever listened to his phone calls. An unexpected police attempt to suppress the name of the European occurs a day or so after Dowsley muses on the phone with Parker about the European's life outside of jail. Carlyon wonders about men in trucks listening to his blather about bad bets and school drop-offs, and he pities them. Intermittent dropouts during phone calls may be a giveaway of surveillance or a sign of Bluetooth unreliability. The media cavalcade mob the obvious targets. Simon Overland, now a local council chief executive at Whittlesea in Melbourne's north, faces questions about being the architect of Gobbo's use, and more questions about the misgivings of his old deputy, Sir Ken Jones, who wondered if some police officers perjured themselves. Journalists also mob Detective Senior Sergeant Ron Iddles, who speaks of a wide group of police officers reaching high within the organisation who knew about the secret. The public wants the truth. Overland says nothing, except to berate a Herald Sun photographer camped outside his inner Melbourne home. Former Chief Commissioner Christine Nixon is silent too. So is Assistant Commissioner Luke Cornelius and the force's head lawyer, Finn McRae. Dozens of officers enveloped by the Gobbo conspiracy, serving or retired, are called to a crisis meeting. Some of them are miffed. They had no idea that closed court battles have been raging for years. The only one who does speak is Chief Commissioner Graham Ashton. Ashton projects confidence for the TV cameras. He uses desperate times, desperate measures rhetoric to defend the use of Gobbo in the struggle to stop the gangland war. The gangland murders slowed after Williams was jailed in June 2004, 15 months before Gobbo was registered as 3838. But the timing does not figure in his analysis. He labels the damning language used by successive judges to describe police as colourful. He doesn't elaborate on his own role in Gobbo's use or reveal that his knowledge of her informing traces to 2007 or earlier. Put side by side the earlier police admissions in court and the Chief Commissioner's comments for the cameras do not gel. Corporate image appears to drive the public strategy. His high-risk decisions in high-risk times comments get some traction. Legal professional privilege and the golden rule of disclosure may be pillars of justice, but they pale into abstractions for those seduced by the gangland folklore. Victorians ask the same reasonable questions posed by Justice Ginnane in the Supreme Court. Does the depriving of legal niceties owed to Carl Williams and Tony Mockbell matter when both men sold drugs by the kilogram? These bastards belong in jail, don't they? A Herald Sun letter writer wants Gobbo crowned as Australian of the Year. In Barwon Prison, prisoners jostle for instant release. Russell Street Police Headquarters bomber and jailhouse lawyer Craig Minogue drafts documents for fellow prisoners. Mockbell reduces his freedom timeline from years to months. Every jailbird suddenly seems to be connected with Lawyer X. "I'm fucking out of here, darling," says a well-known prisoner. Carlyon and Dowsley slog through days of 12 hours or more in the weeks after the High Court announcement. Even so, their succession of front-page stories can't match the longest run of splashes in Herald Sun history. The fallout of an affair between AFL footballer Wayne Carey and a teammate's wife in 2002. Dowsley and Carlyon feel, once again, like little players in a larger scrum. Other journalists, very good ones, have revealed isolated truths about Gobbo's informing since Dowsley's expose. Now he has to share the secret he uncovered almost 5 years ago with the rest of the media pack. Yet, thanks to Melbourne's historical reserve, elsewhere labelled snobbery, the story doesn't reverberate nationally as it would have had Lawyer X happened in Sydney. Parker, meanwhile, sets a precedent. After using the media to get her hands on the internal documents other lawyers have sought for years, she petitions Victoria's Attorney General, Jill Hennessy, who will send Farouk Orman's case back to the Court of Appeal on the 25th of June 2019. Orman's appeal options ran out back in 2011, yet Victoria Police are still reluctant to disclose any information to Tony Mockbell or Rob Karam. Both criminals have fought long appeals with their eyes closed. Documents to support their claims have repeatedly been refused, despite the now established premise that Gobbo incriminated them while she was also representing them. Gobbo is yet to be named, but she is disarmed of her survival mechanism of plausible deniability. She is cleansed from the internet as thoroughly as Victoria Police can manage. Her Premier's Award citation disappears from the web. She will cease to exist by all the measures she holds dear. She has remained close to her half-sister Linda and may have spent Christmas with her just weeks after the High Court's bombshell. The new Elvis sightings are of a peroxide blonde who stands out in a crowd. Gobbo is sighted in Rome, Capri, London, Asia, Victoria's Mornington Peninsula, and yes, Brighton too. The whispers of exotic destinations hide an uglier prospect. Like many of those she once incriminated, Gobbo is serving a life sentence, trapped by her past. Gobbo's predicament brings to mind Isaiah's verse about turning to the left or right before hearing the voice from behind. She can no longer walk her own path. The courts have shepherded her in directions not of her choosing. She has everywhere to hide and nowhere to go. And as 2019 begins, the pressure will mount.